Support for WPR comes from WIPS with Toward One Wisconsin, a conference on equity, diversity, and inclusion, May 7th and 8th in Eau Claire. Registration information and more is at t1w.org.
Good morning, Western Wisconsin. Let's see what we're up to. I'm Al Ross. Hope you had a happy holiday season. Here we are on the second day of 2014. And I have a prediction. This new year will be an entertaining one each Thursday at 10 a.m. on the Ideas Network stations of WPR in Western Wisconsin, and each Friday evening at 7 on the stations of the News and Classical Music Network, where Spectrum West is repeated. Time for Spectrum West, as you might have guessed, on today's program, the first of a new year, one in which we hope to maintain and add to the reputation for bringing you the people who, the places that inspire and entertain us. We remind you that this radio feature on January 7th will celebrate 20 years of continuous service. As the fourth host of the program, I note those who have gone before, Kathy Stahl, Jack Beaver, and the originator of the concept, Eric Wheeler, who joins us from his new home in Portland, Oregon. Also, Dave Beck joins us. He's the assistant professor at UW-Stout, who has art and design students heading west again for more priceless experience, working with icons of their craft in the Jim Henson Company. That after winning impressive awards on at least a couple other occasions for video game design and digital media. Jim Oliver talks with Josh Dolan Neal, who's taken on the joyful task of directing Steel Magnolias, opening in a week at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. It's a production of the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild. What do you say we kickstart a new program in a new year with some ragtime? Yes, it's time again. In fact, it's the 15th time for the Eau Claire Ragtime Festival. And piano performer, you can hear him in the background, Jim Radloff, stopped by with the scoop and who's coming to town. Well, tell us about Brian Holland. He won the Biggie.
Originally from Indiana, for many years has been in Dallas. He has performed in all parts of the United States and around the world in ragtime and early jazz festivals, and we're happy to have him back again.
Cool. I have to tell the audience, too, that I wish at least once that this was television, because Jim is dressed up in his Christmas regalia. He has a gig a little later on, and he's wearing a sequined Christmas vest and a Christmas bow tie. And I'm enjoying it. I wish I could pass along the stellarness of to the audience.
If you think this is good, you ought to come to the festival and see what we've got in store next weekend.
Really? It's a visual thing as much as an auditory thing.
Okay. Oh, yes.
All right. Another guest is Danny Coots. Now, you don't hear about ragtime drums very often. Is there such a thing as a ragtime drummer?
Danny is an all-around drummer.
Oh, okay.
And so he'll fit in with anything. And if you read on his website, he's been all over the world. He's played in over 70 countries. He's a Nashville guy, transplanted from New York, and he will accompany pretty much all the performers, and he just fits in with everything. I've heard him at several other festivals I've been at, and he's quite an addition. Plus, he's a showman.
Is he?
On top of it.
Okay. Yeah, there's nothing like a demonstrative drummer, as far as I'm concerned. I love that. Dr. Dave is back.
Dr. David Mazak is back. That's right. He's our music director, comes to us from St. Louis, has been coming for 8 years, became music director 5 years ago, and plays piano at ragtime festivals that he is the music director for, plus a performer. And in addition is the piano player for the St. Louis Stompers, a world-class jazz band that we've also had up here. So that will be quite a major lineup. And in addition to that, we got the Cody Clawson Trio.
Right, I was going to bring them up. You should trust me, I was going to bring them up. You know, Dr. Dave is filling in for somebody who couldn't make it from Canada, right?
Yes, a Canadian performer, a young man, 22 years old, Max Keenlyside from Prince Edward Island.
Yeah.
And it turns out that we just found out about this a few days ago.
Yeah, I saw that it was on your website as far as
we got it up there as quickly as we could. Max was, for whatever reason or reasons, unable to obtain a work visa.
Ah.
I don't know what he's going to
Maybe
do
he used up too much of his visas.
He did.
He's probably a popular guy.
He is. He's been to festivals in other parts of the country. He didn't think he'd have a problem. But we've got Dr. Dave, so a good backup.
That's good. And now let's talk about the Cody Claussen Trio. This is one of those groups where the son outshines the dad, I guess. Because this guy's right out front, well, and dad's playing the piano.
He does. They came to our third festival. They're a Wisconsin group from over by Coloma. And he was good then, and he was 10 years old. Nine. He was going to be 10. And they've just gone on now. He's got his own trio, dad on piano, but also doubles on guitar and banjo.
Oh, okay.
Cody on banjo and sister Brittany on stand-up string bass.
Yeah.
And together, they're funny.
That's
they're
cool.
funny, and they're good, wholesome family entertainment. They really add definite aspect to this this festival this year.
Jim Radloff with us. Our topic is the 15th Eau Claire Ragtime Festival. That's kind of a nice milestone. You've made it.
It is.
For 14 years, and now you're going to celebrate the 15th. And you are in operation Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Things like, maybe you can give us an idea, but it's pre-concerts, concerts, afterglows, meals with music.
Yes.
Another full weekend.
Everything you wanted in entertainment right here in Eau Claire. In fact, we're going to start out, for the first time ever, a Friday evening pizza buffet. Catered by Yankee Jacks. How good is that?
Cool.
And that'll be at 5 o'clock in the Ingram Hall over at the First Congregational Church.
Okay.
And then, as you said, Saturday morning is good for some free events, Pianorama, the Entertainer's Movie made by producers in Chippewa Falls.
Mm-hmm.
We've got sheet music and recordings for sale there. And the Afterglows. And the Sunday morning Ragtime Gospel Worship Service with the Cody Claussen Trio. That would be really something. The whole congregation participates.
So is it religious music set to ragtime?
It is. The popular gospel hymns of the day and of yesteryear. And our pastor, Reverend Dr. Mark Pirozzini, preaches on the origin. How did these songs get written anyway? What was the inspiration for them? Who wrote it, and where were they performed, and how were they received?
Mm-hmm.
And then we sang the song with the choir as well.
I'm old enough to have been involved in one of the – I was raised as a Catholic kid, and I was one of the first guys to play guitar at a mass. And it was interesting. I thought that was pretty radical at the time. But since then, they have polka masses, then they have lots of religious – you know, collaborations, which is neat.
They do indeed, and we're going to follow along that vein with that Sunday morning service and hope people can get around to that. And following the service, we have our Frigid Frolics Bash and Buffet, and everybody that's been at the festival that has performed will perform in the order that they need to leave.
So this is the big finale.
That's a big finale, right.
And that's where?
That's right in Ingram Hall.
Okay.
It's served buffet style again, and it's always a treat. So we advise people to check out the website, ecragtime.org, and take it from there.
Okay. And you are probably, as soon as this one's over, planning next year's, huh?
We are always planning something. Yes, sir. We sure are. You bet.
Well, you're a busy guy. I see you in lobbies and parties all over the place.
Yeah, I kind of make the circuit.
You're kind of happy that your little accident hasn't affected you more than it has, because you are still playing with the best of them, I think.
I apparently, and the three fingers that I lost most of in that accident do not include the thumb or the little finger.
There you go.
So I make it work with that, and the others don't get in the way anymore.
Have you made your own prosthetic to play the piano?
Nope.
Your own homemade?
I don't use those. I just use seven fingers.
I see.
Seven fingers. So,
okay.
In fact, I even made up a little ragtime song called the Seven-Fingered Rag.
Really?
Yep.
Well, good for you. That'll be popular someday.
Yeah. I'll have to do it at the festival.
Let me know when the CD's out. We'll play it on the air.
All right.
Okay, Jim, thanks so much for being with us, and good luck with the festival.
Well, thank you very much, Al, for having us, and we look forward to seeing a lot of folks here this year, and they'll have a great time, that's for sure.
I'll bet they will. Once again, the website is ecragtime.org. It is January 10th, 11th, and 12th, the 15th, Eau Claire Ragtime Festival. This is Spectrum West. Coming up, the Oliver Report. UW Stout continues to impress with national recognition and participation. And Spectrum West celebrates 20 years with a look back to the beginning.
Support for WPR comes from Grassland Dairy Products in Greenwood, dedicated to providing quality, service, and value by working with Wisconsin dairy farmers and rural communities to enhance quality of life. More information at grasslanddairy.com. Support also comes from Wisconsin Credit Union, offering home mortgage applications online, as well as information about the process, payment amounts, title insurance, mortgage insurance, and more. More at wisconsincu.org.
Spectrum West, good to have you along. The Wide Spot Performing Arts Center in Stockholm is holding auditions for The Mouse That Roared, Monday and Tuesday, January 6th and 7th at 6:30 p.m. And Intro to Improv Part 1 begins this Sunday and runs through the 26th, Part 2 coming in February. To sign up, here's an email address. It's Harley, as in the motorcycle, Harley, H-A-R-L-E-Y, and then three small I's in a row. Harley, I, at yahoo.com. Well, it's a new year, and our good friend Jim Oliver continues to donate his time as a special correspondent for Spectrum West, sitting down and talking with authors and theater people about what they're doing. So along with a big thank you, Mr. Oliver, here's this week's segment.
Steel Magnolias, a play by Robert Harling, opens Thursday, January the 9th, and runs through January 19th at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. Joining us to talk about the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild production is the director, Josh Dolan-Neal. Welcome to Spectrum West.
Thank you.
So, well, I guess we better find out what Steel Magnolias is all about.
Steel Magnolias is this wonderful story of these six women, and they get together pretty much every weekend in a beauty shop. And it's basically their relationship and their time that they spend together. And, you know, and the play follows about the course of a year. And really wonderful to see these characters grow and love and lose and come together and support one another.
Well, the play takes place in, what, Louisiana?
Yep.
Does it have any special nuances to the show that it is from Louisiana, or could it be set in New York or Chicago?
It really is kind of a little bit Louisiana specific. I mean, they make several references to Monroe, and my wife, who's in the show, her grandmother, her hometown is mentioned in the play, so it's really great that we got a little bit of a personal connection there.
What is the appeal of the play? Why do you suppose the Theater Guild chose to do it this year? I don't know if you're on the play reading committee or not. But...
No, I'm not. But my guess is, well, for one thing, it's just a good play. Mm-hmm. It's just really well written. It's well put together. The characters are very much alive. And the women portrayed in the play are so strong and so well-rounded. Like, all of the characters, very well-rounded. And you just get a sense of how much they love one another and how close they come together and how they deal with it, you know, the various problems that pop up in the play and how they support one another. It's just, it is really fun to watch. And, you know, at times it's heartbreaking. And, you know, at times you laugh. It's just such a great show in and of itself. I mean, that's why you pick something like that. It's just really, really well written.
When you talk about the characters, who are the actors who play these characters?
Well, we have Kobe Shaw as Miss Truvy, and Kathy Perizina as Miss Clarie there. Tony Gola as Weezer, and Rose Dolan-Neal as Shelby, and Ali Schoenfeld is... Now I'm trying to remember all my names now. The New Girl. And then there's Barb Goings is in it too. He's a wonderful job as Malin, as like the matriarch.
Well, you've been around theater that I'm aware of for quite a while. What is your background, education-wise, and get into your experience and all of that stuff?
Oh, and that stuff. Well, I've got my degree in theater, so there's that. I've been really doing plays ever since high school. Scary to think, over 20 years now. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I've been doing this for a long time.
Now, you were involved with the Bare Bones Ensemble Players. Yep. Is that still active and functioning?
We're kind of on hiatus right now because I do most of the directing for that. And I've really been working for the Guild for the last 6 months maybe. I did The Diary of Anne Frank, and that kind of rolled right into this. We did do a show in late summer, and I think the next thing we've got planned is probably going to be sometime in March, and I think we're kicking around the idea of doing David Mamet thing. I'm not directing this one, so I don't know. There's lots of swearing and salesmen and Glengarry Glen Ross. That's what it is. Oh. Yeah.
Where do you do your performing with Bare Bones?
With Bare Bones, we usually perform it at the Grand.
At the Grand.
At the Grand. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, the Theater Guild's been very, very nice and gracious in giving us time and space to perform there.
He is Josh Dolan-Neal. He is the director of the Chippewa Valley Theater Guild production of Steel Magnolias. I was able to find something I wasn't aware of. I've known you for a number of years, but I wasn't aware that you were an artist, which is shameful on my side. But anyway, tell us a little bit about your art, or a whole lot about your art, whatever you feel.
Well, lately I do a lot of painting, mainly in acrylics. And the most recent thing I did was I was in The Vision and the Word not that long ago. That was a really fun thing. Fun thing to do, you know. They team up artists with poets, and we develop stuff together. And that was a really great experience, real good time there.
I was curious about the medium that you used to communicate that. Was this did the poets do readings, or was this written, or how did that work?
Well, how we approached ours was a little different. We did I did a painting, and the poet, it was Jason Splashell. He wrote 5 or 6 poems, and I did a real quick wash background on some smaller canvases, and he actually wrote his poems out on canvas. And then we attached them to my main painting, which was like this big, 3x4 monstrosity. You know, you click.
Come on now, you try to sell your paintings. Leave us not talk about monstrosities.
Well, when you had to struggle with it as much as me, you form your own opinions. It was a wonderful piece.
Glad to hear that.
It was really a lot of fun to do, and Jason's poems were fantastic, actually.
So, what kind of art do you do? Landscapes or outdoors or what?
I actually, I've started getting into landscapes, which is something that I never thought I would do, because I started out, I was a lot more surrealist, stuff where it would be just dreamlike and busy and kind of over the top. But now it's a lot more, I guess as I get older, I've calmed down a lot more, and I really love landscapes. I mean, there's so much beauty around us. I mean, it's really hard to not try and reflect that in some way on canvas.
Do you do shows? Do you have your art on display somewhere?
Yeah, I currently have a couple of pieces that are for sale at the Eau Claire Regional Arts Center Gallery, and I should be participating in the Banbury Art Crawl coming up actually in February.
Well, despite all the conversation about art, we've been talking about the play Steel Magnolias. Chippewa Valley Theater Guild production opens Thursday, January the 9th, and runs through January 19th at the Grand Theater in Eau Claire. For tickets, you can call 715-832-PLAY. Josh Dolan-Neal, thank you so much for being with us.
Yeah, thank you.
And thank you, Jim Oliver. We appreciate it as always. Still on the horizon on this edition of Spectrum West, the first of a new year, UW Stout continues to impress with national recognition and participation. We're going out to California again. And Spectrum West celebrates 20 years with a look back at the beginning. First, let's dive into some Spectrum memos. Man, the Phipps Center in Hudson, as usual, is a busy place. There's yoga for youngsters on six Wednesday sessions, January 15th through February 19th. Dance classes for young boys, January 8th through the 29th. Our Town will be produced at the Phipps, January 17th through the 26th in the Black Box Theater. The Barley Jacks perform in concert January 18th at 7:30 p.m. Enrollment is open for ceramic studio classes and workshops. There's also beginning and intermediate pottery on the wheel class beginning January 27th. A six-week clay class for kids 7 to 12 also begins on January 27th. And there's a workshop called Creating Assembled Forms coming in February. This is the final week of a couple exhibitions in the galleries at the Phipps, one featuring Glass of the Heartland and another featuring Pots for Everyday Use. Both close after this Sunday. That, wow, all at the Phipps. Information on the Phipps is online at thephipps.org, and the phone number is 715-386-2305. Well, the annual Barney Awards banquet will be held Friday, January 3rd, recognizing actors for outstanding performances in 2013 and volunteers for assistance above and beyond the call. That's for the Red Barn Theater in Rice Lake. It's at Lehman Supper Club, and reservations are at 715-234-8897. Don't forget the For What It's Worth. No, that's not what it's called. It's called What It's Worth Antique Appraisal Event. Of course, For What It's Worth, not that. It's coming to the Ellie Phillips Memorial Public Library in Eau Claire, and that is Saturday, January 18th. It begins at 10:15 in the morning. If you just want to observe, you are welcome, but to schedule an appraisal appointment, which is necessary, you should call 839-4834, 839-4834. If you have an antique you'd like to find out how much it's worth. Well, UW Stout continues to impress peers, professors, and pundits with the work being done by students within the School of Art and Design in the College of Arts, Humanities, and Social Sciences. Following national recognition in video game design, they've won another digital media award, and a group of students are now heading west later this month for a rather remarkable opportunity. Dave Beck is an assistant professor in art and design, and we spent some phone time with him just the other day. California is good for UW Stout, I'm noticing, and and vice versa, I think. Yeah. Let's go back a bit. You guys won another award in the Golden State in November. Tell us about that.
Myself, along with another faculty member, Robert Frere, who's in the graphic design and interactive media area, took some students out with us to a conference, the International Digital Media and Arts Association Conference. They have a showcase that provides an opportunity for students to show their work that they've been working on, research that they've been working on, as well as for programs to be able to showcase all the different work being created by multiple students. My colleague and I decided to take our students out there, as well as take a lot of the work that we've been having our students produce in our classes, and essentially set up an exhibit that's then juried and judged, and we ended up winning the top award, which was really exciting. Wow. Basically, it's the Student Showcase Award, showing the best overall presentation in digital art and media at the conference.
Way to go.
Thank you.
It was called, interestingly enough, an ideas exhibit, and I thought it was fitting then to talk about it on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
That's
so there
right.
there was a natural segue there. Your release about it, you had a quote, the depth and breadth of what is taught at UW Stout, and you also used the term pushing the boundaries of digital art and design. Now, are you finding that there may not be any boundaries, or maybe not yet anyway?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'd say that you are correct that there are not boundaries, but that's only because people are pushing them. So when new types of hardware or software are invented and started to start to be utilized by students and faculty and wherever it might be.
Mm-hmm.
That's I guess what I'm getting at is the fact that we don't just produce animations and we don't just produce games or just produce graphic design. I really believe that we're always trying to look to innovate on what our students can do. And I think a large amount of that is obviously because we're a polytechnic school, we're driven by the idea of how we can integrate into the industry mm-hmm. and best prepare our students for the industry. So we're always trying to look to see what the industry is doing, whether that be with with animation, things like motion capture, or with graphic design, things like tablets and touch-sensitive devices.
Sure.
And just always continuing to push that boundary. But I think you are right. As things become invented and more happens, that boundary begins to disappear. But then something in the distance rises up that you try and achieve. So maybe boundary isn't the right word, but milestone is or,
sure.
or something like that.
Have you found that you feel like it's important for the educational process to validate what the students are doing through competition like this?
Yeah, I think that it's definitely important to have them understand that we're not just in a bubble. And unfortunately, I think that happens all too often, especially in college campuses. Students become very comfortable with what they're doing. They seem to be getting decent grades, which is the only way it's communicated to them that they are doing well. And if that is the case, then they start to think that maybe they're some of the best at Stout. Maybe that means they're some of the best in the country or the world.
Sure.
And, I mean, this maybe sounds a little bit heavy-handed or pessimistic, but I try and encourage the students, not encourage, I try and remind the students that that's not the case. If they think they're one of the best here, chances are they're one of 1,000 other people that think that too. That could mean they're one of the worst of that 1,000. I mean, or they could be one of the best. So when we compete in these competitions, obviously the ones that show up in the news are the ones that the students are being successful with. But there's also others that I have my students compete in that aren't as successful.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's really important for them to get that humbling experience of breaking out of the boundaries of Stout and realizing that the world is a very competitive place. And
yeah.
The more that they can get that experience, I think the better off they'll be.
There's always been that scrutiny about a college education, where someone says, well, you're just book smart. You need to be street smart as well. You must be fairly successful at combining those two for the students in this particular program.
Yeah, I try to. I try to always be having them look at how it's going to be applied to after they leave, after they graduate. I also really try to bring up the idea that going to school is one thing, and it's great, but you should be participating in competitions. You should be participating in conversations online, applying to things, going to conferences, going to exhibitions, because that is, like you said, that's going to help them be a more well-rounded student, which is something that we always want to have them strive for.
That's Dave Beck. He's assistant professor in the School of Art and Design at UW Stout. There's more stuff happening in California for some UW Stout students. It's actually a course that's coming up, and it turns out to be kind of your idea. Tell us about that.
Well, what happened was I was out in California, and I happened to meet an employee from the Jim Henson Company. One of my all-time favorite heroes is Jim Henson. All of the work he's done has always inspired what I do and what I want to do. And so this was a really big moment for me. I talked to her. I shared some of my past projects I've assigned to students that actually are based on some of Henson's ideas. I think that got her interested in continuing that conversation. So we continued to communicate. Found myself out in California 3 months later, and that time I was in L.A., so I got a chance to visit their lot, the Jim Henson Company's lot, meet with her for a couple hours, propose this idea of a class, saying that basically it would be a somewhat of a collaboration in the sense that I would do most of the work, but I would love for them to be able to essentially almost critique and give feedback to my students, assign the thing and give feedback to them lending their expertise to our students. So that's how it started, and I decided I need to create a new class for this. I need to make this something that can be experimental, that it would happen over a short period of time, which is perfect for our January term, which is only 2 to 3 weeks long. So I created a class called Digital Puppetry. So it's the idea of creating characters using 3D modeling programs, but then also utilizing some of the technology the Henson Company utilizes, which is called the Henson Digital Puppetry Studio, which is essentially gloves that the puppeteer in California puts on, a professional puppeteer, mm-hmm. and it's like motion capture. So anything they do with their hands is translated to a digital 3D character on screen, which is how Sid the Science Kid, a popular children's show on PBS, is all animated.
Mm-hmm.
The last element that I was not expecting to happen right away was, as I was putting it together, I thought, you know, this is all great. You know, all this, it's going to happen where they're going to interact with them over Skype video and talk to them, but they need to get out there. So I started trying to brainstorm how I could make it work so that I could bring the students out there, and that's when I started working with the off-campus studies office here at Stout and figured out a way to make it affordable and also a big experience for them. So now we're going to be on campus for 2 weeks creating the work starting next Monday. After that, the students are going to go out and actually present their ideas to representatives of the Jim Henson Company in person, while also visiting lots of different, we're going to visit DreamWorks Studios, we're visiting Riot Games, CBS Studios, lots of different studios and other types of industry people involved in the Hollywood, L.A. area for an entire week.
You know, it makes me wish I was back in school and in your class, man.
Well, you're welcome to come anytime.
Okay. We all kind of know at the collegiate level, you know, one often sees cycles in athletics. You'll have a stretch of success because of the athletes enrolled and the athletes playing at that particular time.
Mm-hmm.
Could this kind of thing be streaky for you? I mean, do you simply have a bunch of ringers enrolled right now, or is this, or do you see this just being consistent?
I think this is something that can not only be consistent, but will continue to grow and improve. This is also easy to see if you look at our program. We've got one program that is over 1,000 students, and those are all art and design students. And then we also have a program that's about 200, 250 students that is game design students. The art and design program at Stout is very well known and has been around for quite a long time. The game design program is very young, only a couple years old, and we're already starting to see some success there as well. And what I think we're continuing to find is that the more we make ourselves known, we're starting to attract a larger group of applicants, but that also means that allows us to be a little bit more selective. For instance, in order to even get into the game design program for artists, you have to not only get into Stout and be accepted, but you also have to submit a portfolio. So there's certain ways that we are able to essentially set it up so that we can have the best possible group that is being educated and learning here. And then also, we're continuing to hire amazing top-quality faculty members that is a really great asset to the program, too. I think there's a number of different things involved with the equation, but I do not see this as a, you know, maybe that's me being optimistic, too, but I do not see this as a streak.
An interesting observation might also be that, you know, a decade or two or three ago, this kind of activity probably would have been extracurricular. I mean, there would have been a club for this kind of stuff, and now it's an educational process.
That's true. You know, whether it be puppetry or animation or games, that's exactly right. Maybe that's also another thing that attracts students to it, is that I often say to all of my students that if you are not having fun and enjoying what you're doing, you're in the wrong field. For my students, I tell them that you've got to love what you do. And I say, you love what you do and success will follow, because I really believe that.
Yeah, most people, when they get an education, they're told, well, try to think of it as a game. You guys, you don't have to be told that, because it actually is a game.
That's right, it is a game.
Way to go. Okay, Dave, thanks so much for being with us. Congratulations, and keep up the good work, and I have a feeling we'll be talking again.
Thank you very much.
Dave Beck from the School of Art and Design, UW Stout in Menominee. If you'd like more information on the school, you can go to uwstout.edu/ART and then DES, Delta Echo Sierra. Again, that's uwstout.edu/ART and then DES. This is Spectrum West. I'm Al Ross. It's wonderful having you along.
Here's what's on stage in Western Wisconsin theater venues. Don't Hug Me Christmas Carol plays Friday and ends on Saturday at the St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater in Hudson. A Carol of a Christmas will play weekends and selected weekdays at Fanny Hill Dinner Theater in Eau Claire. The show runs through January the 12th. And that's some of what's happening in live theater around the region. I'm Jim Oliver.
Support for WPR comes from Neff's Piano, selling new and reconditioned pianos from a showroom on Water Street in Eau Claire, providing tuning, repair, and piano restoration to the communities of western Wisconsin since 1985. Support also comes from Mayo Clinic Health System, bringing Mayo Clinic care to communities throughout western Wisconsin, with specialties such as cardiology and heart surgery. Information is on the web at mayoclinichealthsystem.org.
Spectrum Memo, Winter After Hours, the snow-based social, begins tonight, Thursday the 2nd of January, continues each Thursday through February 27th at Boyd Park on Eau Claire's East Side Hill just off Main Street. There's ice skating, snowshoeing, snow sculpting, winter cube, a big fire pit, music, hot drinks, and a warming house and restrooms. That sounds pretty perfect. It's sponsored by Volume 1 and Eau Claire Parks and Recreation. Check the website volume1.org for weather-related updates as it goes on. The Eau Claire Children's Theater is holding auditions for Willy Wonka January 12th and 13th at 5:30 p.m. and for A Chorus Line January 19th and 20th at 5:30 p.m. Complete audition information is at ecct.org. You can click on auditions. Children's Theater also presenting The 100 Dresses this Friday and Saturday, January 3rd and 4th, plus next Friday, Saturday and Sunday, January 10th through 12th. Friday shows are at 7:30 p.m. Saturday and Sunday shows are matinees at 1:30. Again, the website has tickets, ecct.org. Well, whereas Eric Wheeler was, back in the 1990s, leading us through a weekly tour of the arts and music of western Wisconsin as the original host of Spectrum West, today, 20 years after this program went on the air, Eric Wheeler is now designing and leading walking tours in the city of Portland, Oregon. And Spectrum West continues to lead weekly tours of the arts, music, and culture of where we live. We decided to look back, all the way back, and commemorate our first 20 years by sharing a conversation we had with Eric Wheeler, as well as Dean Kallenbach, Senior Regional Manager for WPR, who helped plan and give the green light for this weekly radio recital. This is the way it all began on January 7th of 1994.
Good afternoon. This is Spectrum West, Wisconsin Public Radio's regional cultural radio magazine, spotlighting the arts and humanities of western Wisconsin. I'm your host, Eric Wheeler. Today on Spectrum West, we'll hear about Tent Show Radio, which premieres tomorrow night on this and other stations of Wisconsin Public Radio. We'll also bring you an interview with Menominee poet Bill Wheezy, who has just published Voices of White Pine, a collection of poetry from local writers. He'll talk about the book and about the gathering of poets called White Pine. Matt DeGrood will be along with a feature on Eau Claire musician Ben Shaw. Garrison Keeler brings us his weekly Writer's Almanac, and we'll hear from Wisconsin Public Radio Regional Manager Dean Kallenbach about the new radio season. Throughout the hour, I'll tell you about upcoming concerts, displays, lectures, and other things to do here in western Wisconsin. It all comes up this hour on Spectrum West.
Let's talk about where the idea came from. Why Spectrum West and why then?
Eric came with the idea of a show very similar to Spectrum West, I think. And Eric, correct me if I'm wrong, 20 years may have eroded a few of the brain cells here. But Eric had for several years been doing a folk music show on WUEC as part of the student programming. And there were times, if I recall correctly, Eric, you actually, even though you were kind of beyond being a student, you would pay for the radio credit so you could do the radio show.
Correct.
That gives you an idea of the kind of people we're dealing with here. But he had been a longtime volunteer for Wisconsin Public Radio, really as long as I'd been working here, or maybe longer. Mm. And I don't think you were on the board yet then, but you eventually was on the board of the Wisconsin Public Radio Association. But Eric came with this idea and said, you know, could we do something about the local music scene? And as we conversed about it, we thought it was an opportunity to fill the gap with, again, really what the show is now, arts, humanities, literature, those sorts of things. And so as we talked about it, we developed a program proposal and fed it up the line to the Wisconsin Public Radio brass, and they said, yeah, go for it.
Cool.
And we did.
And it aired on Friday afternoons from 3 to 4. And by the way, Eric, I have and have been able to listen to a cassette of that first show.
Oh, my goodness.
But on that first show, you featured, do you remember, you had Warren Nelson on.
Oh, my gosh.
From Big Top Chautauqua.
Okay, sure. I remember calling Warren and telling him what we were up to, and of course he was very excited about getting some airtime in Western Wisconsin. Of course, Lake Superior, Big Top, Chautauqua at that point was pretty much a regional, as in Lake Superior region, northern Wisconsin focus. But obviously, in ensuing years, branched out to have awareness and actually a radio show statewide and probably nationwide, as far as I know.
At that point, they were celebrating their eighth year.
That was back in the early days.
In your conversation with him. And it was also, you had Ten Show Radio was just about to premiere.
Dale Baggerly, first of all, a board member on the Wisconsin Public Radio Board, is a representative from our district up here in Washburn. And even several years ago, he would come to my partner, Betty Ferris, and myself and say, boy, you guys ought to take this show on radio somewhat. And so we had the idea of starting regionally. But then some other board members and people came up to see us, including yourself, Mr. Wheeler, and saw the show. And Jack Mitchell, also the director of Wisconsin Public Radio, has been in our audience a couple times. And all of a sudden, the idea began to spread. And Jack offered Big Top Chautauqua our own network radio show, which we, of course, just love the idea of. And so basically, we're taking pieces of our summer. I always call or compare it to putting a quilt together, making a whole big, beautiful quilt to cover the summer. So we're taking pieces of that quilt, evening by evening, and performer, and sewing together these radio shows.
Warren, I got a question for you. As a listener, as a radio person, as one who's also seen your shows, realizing that there's a really strong visual component to what you do, and wondering about the translation from a live performance to an audio experience. How's it going to be different? What are we going to hear that's going to evoke that sense of being under the Big Top?
Oh, yeah, Eric, well, what you're referring to, we do have a big screen, and a lot of our original musicals, historical shows are also illustrated. Most of the songs are mine, the original ones, and I think they stand on their own without the visuals. And since that part of our summer is about maybe a little bit less than half the summer, we've got all kinds of things to choose from. I did the booking last summer at Big Top Chautauqua specifically with a variety format of radio in mind.
On that show, you also featured what sounded to be, and maybe Dean can clarify this, it sounded as if the Writer's Almanac was relatively new at that time, too.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it was, and it wasn't being used statewide as it is now, but it was free, and it was Garrison Keillor, and we thought it certainly was part of what we were doing with the arts and humanities. And I think Keillor at the time was living in River Falls, so we counted him as a Western Wisconsin guy, so we threw him in the show.
Here's Western Wisconsin's own Garrison Keillor with what will be a regular feature on Spectrum West. It's what he calls the Writer's Almanac.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday, the 7th of January, 1994. It's the anniversary of the first presidential election in America.
You also had on that first show a calendar of upcoming events. You talked about a lot of them, and I thought this was interesting. True to Neanderthal times, you asked people to send in calendar events, but you asked them to send it via mail, regular mail. I mean, you gave the address.
Yeah.
Isn't that weird of how things have changed?
Yeah, how things have changed. Well, the idea for the program, I will claim that, but certainly because in the nature of things, there's really no such thing as an original idea. I've been listening to public radio for years, and programs like Fresh Air and All Things Considered and Morning Edition and the talk shows on Wisconsin Public Radio, hosts like Gene Faraca and Larry Mueller, all provided models for the kind of thing that I wanted to do regionally. I wanted to really focus on what was going on in the Western Wisconsin region, based in Eau Claire and environs, and I think that was as Dean said, the fine and performing arts, the humanities, lifestyles, I mean, broadly bringing to the public radio audience the events, the individuals, the features that were part of that entire scene. And as far as I know, that's what Spectrum West is still about.
Hey, you know, as I was listening to that first show, let me do this first. On the phone with us is Eric Wheeler. He was the original host of Spectrum West when it began on the 7th of January of 1994. So we are celebrating its 20th anniversary today. And Dean Kallenbach is with us in the studio. He's the senior regional manager for WPR. Continuing on the This Is Your Life, back on that first show, you had a segment on the Cabin series at UW Eau Claire.
Oh, of course, yeah.
That featured a cabin committee member. She was called Amber Dernbach, and we had her on a couple weeks ago. She has graduated, I guess you could say. She's now a teacher at Eau Claire Memorial. She is head of the Eau Claire Improv Festival, which is coming into its own very nicely. So that's kind of neat. That's a Where Are They Now thing. You talked about the Joan Baez concert coming up. As a matter of fact, I remember going to that concert back in 94, I believe. You previewed, and Dean brought this up to me a while ago, you previewed the second show.
Speaking of next week, we've got an exciting lineup for the January 14th edition of Spectrum West. Maggie Foote of the Eau Claire Area Regional Arts Center will tell us about performances coming up on the stage of the State Theater in Eau Claire, including a February concert by Joan Baez. Local author Charlene Gillette will tell us about her new book on area history titled West of the Chippewa, a history of the town of Union here in Eau Claire. And we'll have a feature from Eau Claire rock band Voodoo Lovemint on their new recording. We'll also preview a concert coming up later this month from the Minneapolis folk duo Neil and Leandra. That's next week on Spectrum West.
Voodoo Lovemint.
Oh, my God. Okay, thank you for that.
And our intern at the time, Matt DeGrood, was intern, and he was part of the original group that was working on this.
Okay, all right.
He did, on that first show, a segment with a guitar player named Ben Shaw. Yesterday, as I was going through things, I Googled his name. There are a few Ben Shaws that come up, but if you put musician on it, there's a couple guys that are still doing that. So
interesting.
Be interested to see where he went. You also did talk, and you brought it up previously, the White Pine concept.
Yeah.
You had a poem by a Menominee poet, Bill Wheezy, on the show, and I'm going to play that because it's a cool little poem. It's called I'd Like to Buy a Free Throw.
I'd like to buy a free throw, God. Please hear me out on this. My little boy's alone out there, and I know that he might miss. He's played real hard, and so have they, and now the score is tied. The time is spent. He's on the line for one last shot to try. I'd gladly trade a 10-point buck or trophy musky strike if we can cut a deal, dear Lord, for all my luck tonight. Thank you, God, for all you've done and for giving him the ball. The shot is up. It's on the rim. Amen. You make the call.
You promoted Dean Kallenbach being on the show because he was supposed to preview the WPR schedule coming up, but the cassette ran out before Dean, before I could hear Dean. Come on.
We went in later for the budget for longer cassettes. And one of the things I thought was fun about those early days, and we don't have this as a formal feature anymore, we decided to do a thing called the Spectrum West Commentary, where we actually tried to feature art or essays or whatever. And that's, I think, where Michael Perry came in.
Yes.
But we had some other folks. Pat Lovato used to do some poetry for us. Peg Zamish, who was a columnist for the Chippewa Herald, did some great essays. One I remember about chili cook-off that was just hilarious. And, you know, the idea was for spoken word artists to give them a forum to do some things. Rich Gengenbach, of course, the late Rich Gengenbach, did a lot of great stuff for us later on. Willie Williams did some things. So we had a lot of different folks doing different things, anywhere from political satire kind of comedy to poetry.
So, Eric, how long did you do the show?
4 years, as I recall. So late 97, early 98 would have been my last hosting of the show. And then I passed the torch to Jack Beaver.
That's correct.
I haven't hosted a radio show since then, but in the early days of email, my handle was Radio Rick, which was sort of kind of a referencing the fact that I really enjoyed. I spent a lot of time, a lot of hours in, and very much enjoyed my association with Wisconsin Public Radio, in particular with Spectrum West.
Yeah. Did you feel as if you took the show to parts that you might have envisioned beforehand, before handing it off to Jack Beaver? Did it evolve for you?
invariably, I think Spectrum West has evolved through four different personalities, and I think that's as it should be. But from what I understand, the basic context is the fine and performing arts, the humanities from the region, and that's a concept that, you know, I'm really pleased to have been part of originating and at least initiating for 4 years.
Eric Wheeler, Jack Beaver, Kathy Stahl, and now you, Al. Same concept, and yet everybody's done it a little differently, and everybody's done it well. And so it does evolve, but the basic premise stays the same and delivers to the audience.
Well, all I can say is that hosting this show clearly defines the old adage, time flies when you're having fun, because I'm actually, I think, in my fifth year of doing it. I can't believe it's been that long. So I have to thank you, Eric Wheeler, because without you, I'd be sitting home twiddling my thumbs.
Hardly. Seems to be a really good fit for you, and I'm not surprised to hear that you're having a good time, because I certainly enjoyed it.
It's been and it continues to be an uplifting experience. Yeah, Dean Kallenbach, thanks for being with us. Eric Wheeler, thanks so much. Happy New Year to you both, and Eric, success in your new digs.
Thank you very much, Alan. Best to you both, and Happy New Year.
And happy anniversary to you both.
Thank you.
Yes.
Ah, that was fun. That was a lot of fun. You got to look in their rear view mirror every once in a while, don't you? Hey, you know, and the rock band on the second show, Voodoo Love Mint, I do believe we have to do a Where Are They Now on that one. So if you have any idea who was in that band and whether or not it panned out for them, let me know, would you? Send an email to spectrumwest@wpr.org and fill us in just for fun. Who knows? They might be huge. They might have turned into, I don't know, somebody big right now. Again, the email address is spectrumwest@wpr.org. Auditions for Gold Town Showdown, a new musical comedy, will be held Monday, January 13th, 7 p.m. at the Heidi Center for the Arts in Chippewa Falls. Rehearsals are in February and March, and performances will be at the end of March. It's a Jerry Way original, so it should be a lot of fun. Beginning Monday, January 13th, artwork by Art Z Gallery member artists will be on display throughout the offices and public spaces at Bremer Bank in Amory, and an exhibition opens Monday the 6th at the Osceola Medical Center. January, at the gallery in Amory, there's a group exhibition featuring submissions by 25 members and guest artists. It's called Fire and Ice. Hey, again, Happy New Year, everybody. Thanks to Dean Kallenbach for his participation. Eric Wheeler as well, Jim Oliver for the same, Tiffany Coggins for promotional and production aid, to this week's guests, and to you guys out there for making room for us on your radio. We will do it again next week. It'll be on at 10 a.m. on Thursday on the Ideas Network stations. Repeated again at 7 p.m. Friday on the News and Classical Music Network stations. Stay warm if you can. Go Packers.